Hey guys, Jim Cox, and I'm here today with a conversation with Lilia Mead. She's with Divorce Doula Solutions, and we had connected on Facebook and started a conversation around the issue of divorce and some of the challenges. So, Lilia, thanks for taking the time to chat today.
Thanks for asking. Thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What exactly is a divorce doula, and how did you come about to begin this journey for yourself?
Well, a doula, as many people know, is, you know, a lot of people hire doulas for their birthing process. So there's a birth doula. Some people have a death doula, like at the end of life, support for that process. And I personally went through a very devastating, lengthy and expensive divorce myself. And I think I created something that I wish I had had.
And as far as with your divorce situation, divorce is a process. Obviously, it's something that takes years to resolve. But, you know, it's not just about when you actually go start the divorce itself. There's a time period before. Like, what are some of the challenges in that before process that people might want to face that you would be able to help them with?
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, the biggest decision was whether to stay or to go. You know, could I make this work? Could I change myself enough to be confident and to be comfortable in remaining in the relationship and in the marriage? And it took me a lot of soul searching. I would say it took me a good year, a full year of pretty much asking myself this question every day. What's happening? What am I doing? Should I stay? Should I go? Why isn't anything changing? Why am I so full of questions and doubts and insecurities? And it's such an emotional roller coaster ride when a relationship is on the rocks.
And what, I mean, the one of the things that you're pointing to there, though, is you're looking within for answers, but the reality is that there's another party that you really don't have any control over, right?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that's just it, right? It takes two to get married. It takes two to tango. It ultimately takes two to divorce. Obviously, you know, in most cases, it's one person. It's rarely amicable and mutual and peaceful. And, you know, that idea of conscious uncoupling, which is actually ironically what I thought we were doing. I thought we had just come to the end of a really beautiful life together and marriage and raising two children. And I thought, okay, this is the karma has run out and it's time to grow separately and co-parent and support one another from afar. But that was not the case.
So, as far as with, not to get into the details of your situation, but like, are there stages that people go through, like in terms of being able to recognize the having a problem, like they should reassess things?
I mean, you know, it's funny you ask that because a lot of people ask those kind of questions, like, how do you know if it's over? Yeah. How do you know if it's workable, if it's worth it, et cetera? And, you know, my answer is always, if you're asking yourself this question all day, every day, chances are there's a problem and the problem needs to be addressed and uncovered and looked at and discussed. And if it's not, then it's an even bigger problem than you think it is.
So what are some of the items that you can help people with being a doula? Like, is it just a matter of having a second pair of eyes or being able to, I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure the problem is you don't know what questions to ask, right? It's like this is new territory for anybody who's gone through it, unless they've gone through multiple divorces. But even then, you know, it's new territory. It's like you don't know what questions to ask. So.
Exactly. I mean, nobody, as far as I know, gets married with the hope or intent or thought that maybe it will end in divorce. I mean, that's just not something that's on people's radar. So, in a sense, it's a mini little T trauma, so to speak. It's like something happening unexpected, unplanned, unwanted. That really overshadows and affects your entire life, like every area of your life. I mean, especially if you have children, if you own a home together, if you are, financially enmeshed, if there's extended family that needs to be essentially divided, right? You're dividing friends, you're dividing plates, you're dividing property, custody. It's just so much. And unfortunately, it's hard to compartmentalize when you're going through your divorce process because, it's a marathon, not a sprint. And yet the goal, the end game is to be divorced, to be separate and to be free, frankly, or single, or not in a relationship that's no longer serving you.
What, one of the challenges to going through that process is alienating the other party, you know, and it's a fine line between just letting it go off the rails or trying to be more civil. But how do you manage that? Like, how do you try to get what's rightfully yours, but at the same time, not alienate the other party?
Yeah, I mean it's multifaceted, multi-layered. It's very complicated and intricate. Especially when one person holds the keys to the kingdom, meaning, has the power or is the breadwinner or holds the accounts or property in their name only, or many variations on the theme. I mean, in my personal experience, I was just all alone navigating the most treacherous, unpredictable, roller coaster ride emotionally of my life. And I was in survival mode all the way up until the end. I mean, some divorces can be as short as 6 months, and some take as long as 10 or 11 years. So, there's a lot to navigate. I mean, think about all the different areas of one's life, right? There's physical, there's emotional, there's financial, there's spiritual, there's family, there's the roles that you play, how you identify yourself. I mean, a lot of people identify themselves as a wife or a husband or a daughter-in-law or a son-in-law, and all those roles just come tumbling down like an implosion, and you're kind of left picking up the pieces of your marriage. It's like a broken. It can be. I mean, it's not this way for everyone, but certainly people that are seeking a support in their process are dealing with a lot of incoming stuff.
That process of having things break down and kind of fall apart kind of reminds me of I forget who used the term, but Dark Night of the Soul.
Yes.
Like that kind of an experience can really kind of trigger one's kind of reassessment of spirituality. And I mean, spirituality, I think, also, though, can be the way to help people find their own center, right? Which, sometimes in a relationship, people can get buried in the relationship and lose their own identity. So, what's your feeling on that?
Yeah, I mean, as a yoga teacher since 1996 and a meditation teacher and someone who's currently in graduate school for clinical psychology and focusing on trauma, like the trauma track, the trauma field, I can only say for myself, I mean, I can speak for some people that I've worked with, but I can speak for myself and say that I couldn't even roll out my mat and do a downward facing dog or, take a shavasana or close my eyes and chant because I was in survival mode. I was in fight, flight, freeze constantly. And my root chakra, so to speak, was bottomless, groundless. There was no center, there was no earth element, there was no connecting to my breath even. But that was my experience. Many people have different experiences, but for the people that really struggled with the reality of their marriage coming to an end and the breakdown of their family and their life as they knew it, it's a lot to navigate alone.
So, what's the process to kind of start rebuilding oneself after that?
You mean after the divorce?
Well, after the
After
decision
the decision. So after,
to
yeah,
start a
it's funny.
divorce, because,
I write a
yeah.
blog about that on my website about, after the decision is made, what's next? What do you do next? Wow, there's so many aspects. I mean, for me and what I offer people in my services, it's pretty much coming at it from four different angles or directions, which are mindfulness, practices in mindfulness, whether it's meditation or journaling or talk therapy, just something that gets you in the present moment, that gets you connected to your breath and to your now mind and your now heart. And out of the time traveling of going back into the past, going forward into the future. Then there's movement. I think it's really important for people as they're going through this disillusion, this breakup, this breakdown to keep flowing, keep moving their body, conscious movement, whether it be yoga or Tai Chi or running or Pilates or taking long intentional walks, riding your bicycle, surfing. The list is infinite, but to make sure that's put into place every day because self-care is the first thing that goes down the drain when you are going through this unpleasant for most people process.
Yeah. And yet the self-care is probably the most important part, right? In order to come out healthy on the other side.
100%. And not only self-care, but turning the focus back on yourself because there's so much blaming and finger pointing and resentment and anger and just a lot of negativity that comes up with this process of filing, of serving the papers, of going through the divorce. That it's so important to continuously shine the light on yourself. And, what do I need? How can I hydrate and get enough sleep and spend time with family and friends and pursue hobbies and stay on top of my work, show up for my clients? I mean, I know for me, it was almost impossible for me to teach yoga and to show up for my privates. I was out of my mind and out of my body. And my nervous system was really jacked up.
So how did you resolve that? How did you get to a better place?
I had a lot of outside help. I had an excellent legal team. I had a therapist I eventually found my way into a psychiatrist's office and needed some extra prescriptions to, medicate my insanity and my heartbreak and my depression and my anxiety. There's a whole financial concern when it comes to divorce. I mean, look, a scenario of a divorce would be two independent people with similar incomes and similar backgrounds and similar support systems and extended families, and they both decide that it's just time to move on, and they amicably divide everything up 50-50, and sometimes they take big, but that just doesn't happen for everybody. It certainly didn't
No.
happen for me. And whereas in a marriage, everything is 50-50, is commingled. It's ours. It's literally called community property. And then it becomes this transactional kind of division of a business. It's almost like the family becomes a business, and you are, no longer a partnership in a business. You're
And what one of the aspects of that financial relationship is women typically don't have the same financial standing that the man does. So there's disproportionate power or equity there, right?
I would say that's the understatement of our talk thus far, is the financial disparity of, the partners. Yeah. And sadly, it's what keeps a lot of people in the marriage and choosing not to file and choosing not to dissolve is for financial reasons. First might be financial, second might be the children, whether it's young children or, I mean, in my case, they were, I think, 12 and 15, if I'm not mistaken, or 13 and 16. And it, I can't even imagine going through this process with like babies or, toddlers. Yeah.
Is there a way to improve a person's chances in advance of filing for divorce, knowing that that's kind of the direction that you're headed, like to improve their financial flexibility?
Oh, you're talking just finances. I thought you were going to say, is there any way to offset coming to this place of feeling like it's over? Because I was going to, because that's been asked a lot. Like, and I would say, having a conversation would help between each other about your unhappiness. I mean, some people like myself are completely blindsided by the end of the relationship. Like, maybe there were signs and symptoms and suspicions or, speculation, but it would be so nice if people that are struggling in their marriages and their relationships to just have an open, honest conversation, perhaps with a third party, like a therapist, and actually discuss, I'm really unhappy. And either I love you and I want to try and see if we can make it work, or I'm done, and let's see if we can do this quickly, easily, and as inexpensively as possible. But that's not the question you asked, so tell me again, Rachel.
That's a good answer though for that particular question, but no, I mean if somebody's decided that, we've got a she or he has got to change and the finances are an issue, like how do you overcome that hurdle in a way where you're not disabled by the financial issue, you know?
Yeah, I mean
Is there any planning that can be done in advance to try to deal with that?
I don't think there's any advanced planning. I think there's just boots on the ground, it's happening and we deal with it. And, you know, the hope would be that both parties are transparent, are communicative, are fair, and that it goes smoothly. Like, okay, we've got the house, we've got the kids, we've got the 401k, we've got this, we've got that, we've got life insurance policies. Let's just split it down the middle and let's help each other move on and support each other in the next chapter. Like, that would be best case scenario. And sadly, worst case scenario is kind of like, 1 minute you're all in and there's no hierarchy or power struggle or division of anything. And then the next minute, it's like a fire sale.
Yeah. So how do you help kids deal with this issue? Like, kids are probably the most vulnerable because, you know, they have no power over the outcome, obviously. And, you know, they're victims as much as anybody else.
Well, that's a really good point and something that's not really addressed anywhere. And it's hard for a person like me to even approach that other than being a parent myself and sharing my own experience and my own, you know, strengths and hopes for my kids. You know, ideally, parents don't disparage the other parent in front of the children. Sometimes that's challenging and unavoidable for obvious reasons and obvious settings. And it's just challenging in general when you're going through something that is very, very painful, very public. And especially if your children are of the age where they have eyes and ears and, you know, a brain and a heart, and they can see what's happening. You know, they can see. I do think it's better for children to not have to see fights and unhappiness, even if it means the parents split, they separate, or they like a trial separation or a divorce. You know, happy mom, happy baby. That's what I used to teach when I taught mommy baby yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And we teach by being. So the main focus is to practice self-care and to be kind to yourself and to have compassion for yourself going through what you're going through. And it's so hard. It's really challenging because inevitably there's feelings and there's resentment and there is blame and there is culpability, right? You know, someone needs to be held accountable for what went down, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Especially when there's infidelity or physical abuse or verbal abuse, or, I mean, you know, I was working with one woman and it's such a challenge when it comes to the children in terms of safety and what's best for them and the law and, right? It's just, it gets very complicated and very muddy.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned law. Like, one of the things I think as a society we value Ruth Bader Ginsburg for was the advancements that she made in the 70s for women under the law. I mean, if you would have talked about these situations in the 70s and, you know, women had absolutely no power and no ability in terms of dealing with decision or financial issues, let alone anything else. Is it still that way in your experience, or is the ground more leveled?
Oh, it's definitely more leveled. I mean, I think that's why people in my mom's generation, and especially my mom actually was divorced from my father. But that being said, her parents and my father's parents, And that generation, there was not a lot of divorce happening. So I think people would just stay together for that very reason that you are bringing up, you know, that it wasn't a level playing field. I mean, I'm just so grateful I got divorced in the state of California, where it's a 50-50 no fault state. And I do think there's been progress, you know, and I mean, there are laws to protect things like a mother that stayed at home and doesn't have a livable income on her own. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. You didn't ask this question, but I used to think about this a lot, and I tell women this when I talk to them, you know, stay-at-home moms, it has its own obviously reward and its own gratitude, and I wouldn't change it for the world, but it's a thankless career to be a stay-at-home mom. I mean, you know, you don't get paid, you don't get overtime, you don't get sick days, there's no bonuses, there's no profit sharing, there's no pay increase, all of that. And a mother would never say that the children are more hers because she spent more time with them, or she, you know, conceived them in her belly, or gave birth to them, or nursed them, or stayed at home. And yet, a lot of men, a lot of people's, I was going to say men, a lot of men who are the breadwinners in the family, when it comes down to the disillusion and the division of everything, you know, there's this ownership of, well, that's my money and I earned it. And, you know, it's just an interesting asymmetry, we could say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of issues in terms of equity and with women in society, and you know, just gender roles. So.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of women do struggle with, you know, working full time, not working full time. If you have that option of being able to stay home with your children, wouldn't you take it? I mean, wouldn't you do that if you have that option? Some people don't have that option, and I understand that, but I mean, it's, you know, Jackie Kennedy once said, you know, if you bungle raising your children, nothing else much matters. It's one of the greatest things you can do is be a good parent and role model and be an active part of their upbringing and childhood.
That's good. What kind of resources are out there for people who are looking at trying to make decisions? Like, is there a lot of material to help people clarify their thinking? I mean, whether it's in terms of starting the process, or should they, in other words, should they first find a therapist, second, find an attorney? I mean, is there a list of those resources?
That's a great question. I mean, that's really interesting. I know.
Or do you just go off of referrals of friends and networks? I mean,
Okay, so there is, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of resources out there. There's Google for one, and ChatGPT, and there's websites and Facebook groups, and there's, of course, talking to your friends that have been through it. There's books to read, tons of books, right? But ultimately, at the end of the day, the decision is completely and 100% yours to make.
Yeah.
So you can have as much influence and information as you can get your hands on, but it's a deep, deep dive and soul search to decide whether to stay or whether to go, whether it's workable, whether you see change in the near future. Yeah, and that's, I mean, I remember not only did I read books and go online, but I actually went to some weird something I saw on Facebook or something I saw. I went to some event where there was a speaker. It was like a life coach, you know, self-help public speaker, like a TED Talk kind of event. And ironically, that really, if I was on the fence, that his presentation really put me over the fence because, you know, if there was a checklist of whether or not one should leave a relationship, I pretty much checked everything off the list.
So it's just a matter of things building up to a point where, yeah, it becomes obvious and you just need to go.
I think so. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with the frog fable. Are you familiar with the frog fable?
No. Oh, you mean like frogs in a pot boiling, turning it
Yes.
up slowly? Yeah.
So two kinds of frogs. One is like you put the water on at a low temperature and you put the frog in. I mean, it's a terrible image and metaphor, but there's a lot of terrible animal metaphors out there. But it really resonated with me. You put a pot of water on and you put a frog in a pot while it's slowly coming to a boil, and the frog doesn't feel it. Doesn't feel the heat because it's slow and it's consistent and it's non-harmful, right? But then
Yeah, it's not a shock.
it's not a
Yeah.
shock, but then it gets to the point where the frog is literally being boiled to death and it can't crawl out, right? Then there's the image of the boiling pot of water. You put the frog in and it immediately climbs out for self-protection and to save its own life. So for a lot of people, it's a slow boil, and that's why it's such a big decision and it's so confusing because maybe there's still love for that partner. Maybe there's still hope that something will change, or maybe they take it upon themselves and blame themselves, like maybe if I change, right? Maybe if I lost weight, maybe if I, you know, changed jobs, maybe if I kept the house cleaner, or like any and all ridiculous thoughts of what you could do to make it all work. And then there's scenarios, unfortunately, where there is abuse. You know, there's physical abuse, there's verbal, there's psychological, child, and then the decision is made for you. For most people, they just can't justify staying in something that's abusive. Yeah.
Well, this has been a lot of information. I think a lot of people the issue resonates with, if not for themselves, for people that they know. I mean, and I appreciate your sharing your expertise and your time. If people want to learn more about the work that you do, how can they learn more slash reach out to you?
Yeah, so the best way to sort of check out what I'm up to is the website, which is divorcedoula.solutions. And then I also have, you know, Instagram, and I've just recently started a TikTok, and I have a Facebook support group. And I've written some blogs. So, you know, if you're interested in what I had to say and anything, you know, resonated, you can just go in there and read everything. And you know, I also offer a complimentary it's like a, I don't know if it's 45 minutes or 30 minutes, but it's just a nice way to introduce yourself and to meet me and see if it's a nice match, a connection.
That sounds good. And they can reach out to you through the website, I would assume.
Yeah, absolutely. Or they can email, like there's a phone number, there's a email. It's Lilia at divorcedoula.solutions, and that's Lilia.
Sounds good. And I'll
Yeah.
have that information in the description of the program. So I appreciate you taking the time to chat. And you know, I'm sure we can There's so many issues around this that we can go deeper into, and I'd love to do that again when you have time.
I'd love to do it as well. I look forward to hearing from you.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks,
Okay.
Aline.
Thanks.
Take
Bye.
care.